to laugh often and much, to win the respect of intelligent people and the affection of children, to earn the appreciation of honest critics and endure the betrayal of false friends, to appreciate beauty, to find the best in others, to leave the world a little better, whether by a healthy child or a garden patch, to know even one life has breathed easier because you have lived. This is to have succeeded. That's one view of it by Ralph Waldo Emerson long ago. What is success? What is it to have lived well? And different cultures with different things. And Ignatius outlines one way that the evil one, the ways of the culture, would say accumulation, self-esteem, self-establishment. It's pretty much all about me. It's winning appreciation. And Emerson has some good thoughts, but it's pretty much what I do. And it starts very, very early. So, winning approval. I recently went to the home of a couple whom I married a couple years ago, and they have a little child about 2 years old. And I walked in, and she knows me because of a picture of my baptizing her when she was a baby. And the very first thing she said to me was, "I'm potty trained." Which I smiled at, and then she said, "Do you want to see my underwear?" And so she's holding up her little underwear, and she said, "And this one has rainbows." Well, she is early earning my approval very early, because that's what it's about. Her parents are very happy that she's potty trained, and she is happy that they're happy, and she feels loved because they're not scolding her, and they're happy, and she wanted me to be happy and share in her happiness. So it starts very early, this winning appreciation. And it's very natural and healthy and all. I wouldn't want to gainsay that. But what do you do when you experience the emptiness of that? Or the necessity to keep peddling and to keep impressing and keep chasing? What do you do with the emptiness of it? Well, there is another side, and Ignatius says there's this way of the evil spirit, and we're attracted to that. You cannot avoid it. There is the other side, the ways of Jesus, and you might be attracted to that, but maybe not. They're in conflict, so you drift between one and another. One will be more attractive than the other at any time. So living in that tension has to do with holiness. It's not that to try to find a balance between the two. No, it's to know, when are you being called to self-establishment, to impressing? So that the ways of Jesus, as we learn, even from the life of his mother, is accepting, believe it or not, being grateful for, believe it or not, the emptiness that is part of life. To not run away from it. To not run to the texting screen or the smartphone or the computer or getting answers or getting affirmation or getting accompaniment. What about being alone and being quiet and being unproductive? Oh, that doesn't sound very successful. That doesn't sound at all worthy of me. I should be doing something at all times. Well, when that is the way you live, then having a spiritual life is a little bit outside the realm. Because the spiritual life asks for silence of all kinds, of resisting productivity, resisting what is in it for me, to let there be emptiness. And we don't do well with the empty. Our culture says, no, don't go there. There's nothing there. Well, does that mean that there's something there when you have accomplished everything? Isn't there still an emptiness? Yeah, but you can escape it. You can run away from it. Our inability to deal with human emptiness, this is an uneducated observation, but it is an observation. Our avoidance of our humanity and its experiences of empty and reaching and not knowing, the avoidance of emptiness is the beginning of addiction, I think. That I don't know, I must fill up what is natural to me with something. Anything that I can turn to avoid one of the essential experiences of humanity, which is longing, empty, not having. And being grateful for the empty, being grateful for the incompleteness of everything. Everything leads to an emptiness. But the emptiness is sacred, but we don't trust it. And so we go to gambling, pornography, alcohol, gambling, work, hobbies, anything to help me avoid what is essentially human. Our hearts are restless till they rest in God. I don't like the restlessness, and I don't like the God that doesn't fulfill me right now. And that's what I said early in the retreat. We love the new. We can get addicted to the new, the different, because it temporarily fills me, but then it becomes old. The new becomes old. And then I say, well, that didn't work, so I'll get something else, another idea, read another book, go to another guru, buy into another philosophy. No, but it's not nihilism. It's not that there is nothing at all. It is that there's a holiness there. And this is where the holiness is, that if I can live with the experience of not knowing, not having, it's an invitation to be more reverent with the things that once I thought were gods. I am reverent towards anything. I have a reverence for it because I don't need it. I don't need it to be me. What I need is to be peaceful with my humanity. And getting peaceful with my humanity takes silence, which is what we're doing in prayer time and retreat, to just let there be, being grateful that there's nothing new, that it's my old self, and to be peaceful there. It's one of the reasons that Jesus doesn't give answers. He gives invitations. And we'll see that in today's liturgy, where the religious officials say, by what authority do you teach like this? And you will see, this is Mark chapter 11, by what authority? And he says, well, let me ask you a question. It's very Irish of him to not answer with an answer, but with a question. So the invitation of Jesus, remember when Jesus entered a person's life or a group, like with these scribes and elders, Pharisees, Jesus is by his very nature an interruption, a provocation. And by so putting people, responders in tension, that some want to resolve the tension one way and some allow the tension to be there. Come follow me, and Peter's intention, but he allows it to be there. He's leaving the full to embrace the empty. Imagine that. But as long as we cling to the familiar full, we will not deepen. We will get broader. We will have indulgence. But Jesus puts us all in tension by asking us to let go of false gods, in a way, or false senses of fulfillment, and come into the mysterious, the unknown. And as I said, that's more and more difficult for us because we are surrounded by the facilities of insight and knowledge and data. And we get a comfort there. Now we know. So it's very difficult for us to go into the mysterious, to the adventure. We don't like it. Einstein said there's nothing more beautiful than mystery. It is the basis of all art and science. And those who do not allow mystery in their life are dead. There's something dead in them. So Jesus, one of the gifts of Jesus is, and we can pervert the Gospels, but it's not answers. Don't look to Jesus for answers. Look to him for invitations for his accompanying you into mystery. The mystery of today, the mystery of relationship, the mystery of your past. To invite us to go into the adventure of being honest about our past. Not for answers, but for peace. And he accompanies us. So his invitation is not about envy, which is the root of our present-day culture and the invitation of the evil one, to envy ourselves, to envy anybody else, to find ourselves by comparing ourselves, that's our identity, invites to gratitude. Gratitude for what is. Jesus lived, this is for you English teachers, Jesus lives the indicative, that is, the isness of things. The opposite of is if only, and that's called subjunctive. And we can live if only this had happened, if only this will happen. That's if I were, if it were, if life could be. All those natural possibilities and all, but Jesus always deals with what is. And asks us to deal with what is, gratefully. Whereas the evil spirit invites us to the subjunctive. If you wish to be, if you were to be able to do this, if you were able to get that, that's subjunctive. It's contrary to fact. But the evil one moves us from what's contrary to fact to believing that it is fact. Okay? So Jesus is saying, come, and he's always saying to the apostles, come, let's go over to a deserted place. Let's go by ourselves. Why? So that we can be freer to be who we are when we are involved in others. That's why Mary did not keep the good news, the invitation to herself. The good will always want to be distributed. It's the nature of good is to diffuse itself, to spread itself. You know a joke, you got to tell it. So that, come away so that we don't stay away. That's what prayer does. Come away into silence, into the experience of your own truth, because then you will not avoid what's indicative, what's real. But if you live in the subjunctive, you will avoid the real. I hope that makes sense. That we go into prayer to receive what is, what I am, and what who God is and what reality is. And I get a little picture of it. Not the total thing, but I get a picture of it. And to the degree to which I am grateful and not envious, I will be generous. That generosity is based on gratitude. That distribution is based on receptivity. I will give what I have. So I have to go away. I have to go into this is a funny way to say it, but into the indicative of silence, that which gives me my is, my truth. And Jesus says, okay, I invite you to not accumulation, but receptivity of what is, a poverty of receptivity, and a poverty that doesn't rely on anything else to tell you who you are and how you are. I will give you you if you let me have time with you, if you sit down and shut up, and I'll comfort you in your isness, and let you go of your ifness. Let go of that. If only, if I could be, if people like me or something, I move from the if to the is. Very big conversion. From the if to the s. From the if to the is. One of the that when I am receptive and grateful, the consequence of gratitude, while it's generosity, is also a solidity of person, a solidity of self-consciousness, so that I, instead of impressing and wondering how you think of me, I don't think of me. I receive me. And what other people think, what other insults, and that's why, especially in Luke's gospel, if you look at both the Beatitudes in Matthew 5, and the Beatitudes, it's a shorter form in Luke, in chapter 6 of Luke, there's a lot about persecution and what people think. And that's a real freedom. Can you imagine being peaceful when people insult you? Because what they're doing is asking you to go to the if, and you find it easier to say, you think that I am this, but I know who I am. Now, Jesus heard who he was, and he believed it. That's in Matthew 3. The end of 3. Matthew 3. And it's the baptism, and he heard. Because he heard who he was and bought it and took it into himself, then he was freed to listen to anything, any interruption, invitation, insult, anything. He was available to it because he knew who he was. And he wasn't changed by it. And he kept in the indicative, in the isness of his life. And he could listen to the invitations of the poor and the unwanted and the sick. He could be faithful to them because he was faithful to himself. Not in some natural pride. What's the difference between being proud and being receptive? That when we are receptive of ourselves, it's not a matter of pride. It's a matter of gratitude that moves to availability, and I am vulnerable and available. You insult me, you throw things at me. It only affirms me. It doesn't change me. It deepens me. I know who I am, and that's how Jesus lived. He could live with the insults, and it never changed him. It said, And they said, oh, you know, you're this, or you're false this. And he never said, I wonder if you're right. You know, which would be to move to the subjunctive, to the possibly contrary to fact. And so one of the invitations for a person making the exercises is, how are you when things don't go well, when people aren't celebrating you? Do you doubt who you are and how you are? Are you tempted to worship at their altar? Which is very natural. We love to be loved. We like to be liked. We love being respected. No, but does what people challenge you about, does it shake you? Well, maybe it shakes you, but does it remake you? Does it form your image of yourself? And that's, remember I said, what creates you will be your God. Okay? It might be your job. It creates you. It's who I am. Well, then that's where you worship. You worship at that desk or that machine or whatever. But what do you do? What do you do with insults? What do you do with contradictions? Because Jesus lived that way. How do you do with, by how you live, does your life at all insult the ways of the culture? That's a big, big question. Because if you are insulting the culture is not going to like you. If you resist buying this or buying that, they're not going to like it. In our business school, I'm speaking with a senior woman student, and she was embarrassed because she's taking a course in marketing and learning the tricks of seducing buyers into buying products. And what she was embarrassed about was how easily seduced she has been in her buying life by tricky marketing. And now she's learning how to be a tricky marketer in our Catholic business school. And she said, there seems to be a contradiction here. You know, that we're tricking buyers by the color of our packaging or the size of the letters in the package or celebration or something. And she was quite embarrassed by the fact not only that in the past she has been tricked, but that she is entering into that form of the culture that is going to fascinate and perhaps not be totally truthful, legally truthful, but not really. And she's entering into that. That was an embarrassment for her. We struggle then with this tension between what do we do with insults, oppression, any form of resistance to who we are. How do you do with that? Oh, so what's going on here, you see, that while the one side, the evil spirit side, says be dependent on things and people's opinion, be dependent on them and independent from God, the way of Jesus is be independent from the names and the objects that would give you a name, and be dependent on God rather than independent. So it's a tension, and that's the tug of war. And we're attracted to the ways of Jesus, and we are attracted to the ways of the culture. That's where our spiritual life is, and we don't run away from it. And we keep trying to show up for the invitations to be freed from pure nature and to be attracted by the grace of God's identity of us. Another, well, maybe we'll come back to that later. It'd be good to be embarrassed by how we all get suckered in to buying into the subjunctive, and how we do want things to create us. And the question, of course, is that Jesus stayed available. He could listen to everything. Can I listen to everything? Because I have listened to who I am. The more I know who I am, not stubbornly but gratefully, the more I will let you insult me or question me or challenge me, as Jesus did. So what we're doing in the exercises is say, if I can know your ways, I will be attracted to them. If I can know them, if I can know you, I can't love what I don't know. And I will follow you to the degree to which, and I will reveal you. The object of the Gospels and the object is not answers, and the object of the exercise, not answers. The object of the Gospels is to remember the ways of this person of Jesus. Remember his ways and try to see how they put me in tension between grace and nature, between the indicative and the subjunctive, between self-establishment of myself or being created by God. So we don't look for answers in the exercises. We look for the call of Jesus to me. And how is that? To what is he calling me? Well, it might just be mystery, but we don't like mystery. We want clarity. Well, we want clarity. Why? So we can be independent from Jesus and from God. Yeah, that's natural. We want to be independent, show our strength. And that's why we don't like mystery. We love clarity and the security of identity that comes from what we have and what people think we are. So I'd like you to spend some time watching Jesus listening to all the invitations. You're not that, or yes, you are. You are the Son of God. And you'll see in John's Gospel, almost all the time, the apostles come to believe that this is the Son of God. You see that in chapter 2, but it goes on. It's always an invitation to believe. And that's the freedom of the exercises, is to surrender to the reality that we are not God, but that God is God. And God loves and labors to bring us more and more to life, more and more freedom, more and more available to live in the indicative. So you might watch Jesus doing his good, being who he is, and how that bothers people. They're always... He listens to the invitations, and the Pharisees and the opposition listen to what he's doing. He listens to who he is. They listen to who they hope he's not. And we're in that tension. We are a Pharisee to our own Jesus. That's a crazy way to say it, but we are tempted to challenge the reality of Jesus, the ways of Jesus, because they are an interruption to our lives. Just one final thing. You will see in life and in the spiritual life that all interruptions are invitations. You ponder that. And watch Jesus being interrupted, and to what is he being invited? He gets invited, and there are interruptions. You see in Mark 6:30, they go off to a lonely place, and what happens? All the people come. They were going to go off and have a little retreat day, and they interrupt him. There's a lot of interruption in Jesus' life, and he took them all as invitations to what? To be who he is. The invitations, a lot, are to not be who he is. So the interruptions are invitations to the subjunctive, and he changes them all to the indicative. I will be who I am. I am not what I do. I am, and so I do. the good that he does comes from the good that he is, and that's the invitation for us too. So pray with Jesus, listening to who the Father says he is, and to listen to the challenges that he receives to that identity, even insults. And that's a real freedom in the exercises. Can I follow Jesus even when I am contradicted, opposed, and insulted? That's a real freedom.